First, the number of immigrant families detained while trying to enter the U.S. illegally has spiked in recent years, with 2019 on pace to see even more apprehensions than last year. Many of those arriving at the border come from agricultural regions in Central America, where more extreme and unpredictable weather is making it difficult to earn a living from the land. Our next guest spent time reporting in western Guatemala and found that while people have a lot of reasons for leaving their home and traveling north, many of them stem from a changing climate. Jonathan Blitzer is a staff writer at The New Yorker. John, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you so much.
Well, John, I think a lot of focus is on people coming from high-crime urban areas in Central America. You found a different part of the story in this agricultural part of western Guatemala. Set the scene there for us.
Sure. And I'm glad that you make the qualification, too, that there is violence driving a lot of people from this region as well. I was just zeroing in on people who are fleeing Guatemala because of hunger, because of deep entrenched poverty, all of which has been exacerbated in recent years by climate change. So I was visiting small villages in the western highlands of Guatemala, trying to get a sense of how in people's day-to-day lives, climate change was impacting their livelihood and forcing them to abandon their land. And what I was finding was that there were a whole host of factors that have to do with the climate that are forcing people out. So for example, rains that typically come in May and June are coming much later. Rains coming irregularly poses a real problem for subsistence farmers because they can't plan their harvests. And so often they have whole crops destroyed by things like that. There are droughts that are lasting longer than ever before. There is more humidity that affects the soil and leads to the growth of new funguses and pests that destroy crops. There are spikes in temperature followed by drastic drops in temperature. All of this kind of irregularity is basically forcing people who grow things like potatoes, maize, vegetables, not just to sell in local markets, but also for their own food. All of this stuff is forcing those people to abandon their harvests and to try to seek some sort of relief in the U.S.
And if I'm reading your reporting right, even in ideal weather conditions, these are people who might just be getting by.
That's right. I mean, these are we're talking about areas that are extremely poor and extremely vulnerable to these kinds of swings in climate because changing climate because, you know, I was in places at a very high altitude. And so there's a limited number of crops that people are able to grow at these altitudes. And so the fact of what's happened in recent years has really made a precarious situation much worse.
You talked to people who had tried coming north and been deported or family members of people who had successfully made it in the U.S. Can you talk about what kind of factors they are weighing in making that decision to give up on the farm there and make that difficult journey?
You know, on the U.S. side of the border, we tend to think that if we make entry into the U.S. harder, if the U.S. government makes it much more difficult to enter through more punitive policies, through increased enforcement, that somehow that will weigh on people's decisions to leave in the first place. And what I found, and what a lot of colleagues of mine and other reporters have found, is that people who are fleeing for their lives, whether it's because of violence or because of hunger, don't really have much of a choice, aren't thinking that far ahead. The people I was meeting were not doing much more than weighing strategies for how to make their journey. It was no longer really a question of whether or not they should do it, or even for that matter, when, but rather how. And in terms of why the people I was meeting were making those decisions in the ways that they did, it was quite simply because they had nothing. Their crops were not coming to harvest. They were losing money every time they tried to grow them. Many of the families I spoke to were actually hungry, had gone days without eating. It was that level of desperation that was forcing people to travel north.
Talking to Jonathan Blitzer, staff writer at The New Yorker, talking about his reporting from Guatemala and how climate change, difficult farming conditions is driving many people to try to make their way to the United States. And John, for those people who stayed there, talk about the role that remittances played when that person comes to the United States and sends money back.
Absolutely. It's a complex phenomenon because obviously we're talking about major spikes in immigration over the last few years, but there's been pretty steady levels of immigration to the United States, at least since the late 1970s, and the trend has essentially just increased and now recently spiked. And what that means is that in a lot of these communities, there are either family members, friends, neighbors who have reached the United States. And when they do reach the United States, many of them arrive with the expectation that they'll spend maybe a few years in the U.S., they'll earn enough money in the U.S. to eventually build a house back home, to begin to buy land for their family back home. And frequently what happens is that people end up staying in the U.S., or for a variety of reasons, kind of get caught between the two countries. But the amount of money that flows back to Guatemala every year in the form of remittances is staggering. It's 11% of the gross domestic product of the country. It's much more money than what the U.S. used to contribute to Guatemala in the form of international aid. It's gotten to a point where in certain communities, the success of a local economy almost seems to depend on how many people living in that community were actually able to reach the U.S. and therefore pay for their families' needs and costs remotely in the form of remittances. So the whole remittance economy is a real dominant force in the local economies and livelihoods of these people. And it's one of the reasons why ties between the U.S. and Guatemala remain so strong.
And back a few years ago, farmers in the area you visited worked with a program that was funded in part by the U.S. That tried to help help people adjust to changing weather patterns, to changing climate. What kind of programs did you see that had come out of that?
Well, when I went, the president of the U.S. hadn't yet threatened to completely cut aid in the way that he did in recent weeks. And so I was looking at a few places where communities were still being supported by local, national, and in some cases, international NGOs doing all kinds of things. Where I was, essentially, communities were getting help with the diversification of crops. As temperatures and climate was changing in some of these places, it was increasingly important for members of the community to learn to plant different crops that were more adaptable to the changing climate. And also to use different strategies, for example, to plant their crops in different ways, taking advantage of patches of sun and shade, increasingly trying to reforest parts of these mountainsides that had been increasingly deforested over the years. One of the places where I spent a lot of time, a tiny hamlet called Paraje León in the Western Highlands, there was a small program that was funded in large part by money from the U.S. State Department that over the course of a three-year span amounted to about $190,000, which from the U.S.'s standpoint is absolutely a tiny amount. I mean, a drop in the bucket in terms of American expenditure in the region. And this money went such a long way in this particular community in helping community members begin to diversify their crops and improve just the sort of environmental factors where they lived, that a significant number of people did not emigrate as a result, whereas in the past they may have been more inclined to head to the U.S. when their crops died. This program was wound down by the Trump administration in 2017 because of the Trump administration's hostility to initiatives related to climate change. And so, unfortunately, even programs that saw major gains over the last few years and that were reproducible and that were quite cheap to implement are no longer getting the backing of the U.S. government.
What kind of crops were people starting to switch to under this program?
There were things like, I mean, one of the strangest things I have to say about being in this particular area was that we were standing at maybe 9 or 10,000 feet above sea level, and you can see everything from apples to maize to citrus fruits, which almost never can be grown at those kinds of altitudes, coffee in some cases. These were all signs, in fact, of how significant climate change has affected the region. But these were the kinds of things that community members were increasingly encouraged to try to plant, and they were given the seeds to do so. They began to use greenhouses to grow things like tomatoes and flowers. So they were not just creating food for themselves, but they were also beginning to grow things that allowed them to make small sales in local markets. And that was the kind of advantage of having this direction. I mean, there were trained agronomists, forestry experts, all of them were coming to this town on more or less a weekly basis over the course of a few years.
As we wrap up, John, as you talk to people in Western Guatemala, did you get the impression that staying there, if they could, was the first choice and that migrating was a last resort?
I think that's right. I think no one wants to leave home. I think the situation on the ground has gotten to a point where there's such direness and such desperation that people have little choice. And so when the question is simply a question of when you're going to leave and not whether or not you'll leave, then, you know, I think you're already looking at a landscape that's been pretty badly decimated by that expectation that there's really no hope in staying. But the people I met did not. I mean, these are people who very much wanted to stay where they were. A lot of them only traveled reluctantly. Some of them had traveled before, got apprehended, deported, but had incurred such debts in having made the trip the first time that they had to keep trying in order to get U.S. wages to pay off these debts. All of those people would say to me, I just want to find work here. I just want more or less stable wages here. I would be very happy to stay here. That was mostly what I was hearing.
John, thanks a lot for joining us today.
Thanks for having me.
That's Jonathan Blitzer, staff writer at The New Yorker. He was with us to talk about the ways that climate change is driving much of the migration out of Central American countries in rural parts of Guatemala and neighboring nations. He shared some of his reporting from Guatemala with us.